Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Is there anything funny about the Holocaust? It's a question award-winning director, cinematographer, editor Fern Perlstein tackles with her documentary, The Last Laugh. The film explores what is and isn't off-limits in comedy. Fern combines clips from films, stand-up, and interviews with such bold-faced names as Mel Brooks, Carl and Rob Reiner, Judy Gold, Joan Rivers, Gilbert Gottfried, Louis C.K., Chris Rock, Susie Essman, as well as prominent Jewish leaders like Abraham Foxman and Auschwitz survivor Renee Firestone. The film opens in New York on March 3rd, in L.A. on the 17th, and rolling out across the country, and will be on the PBS series Independent Lens this spring. I had the distinct pleasure and honor to have a conversation with Fern in 2016, and now I get to do so again, but this time it's a double bonus, because two-time Emmy Award winner and comedy icon Judy Gold is also here. This show is only 30 minutes, not nearly enough time to list all of her credits. So let's get this party started. Fern, welcome back, and Judy, welcome, period.
Oh, so happy to be here. Glad we finally did this.
Let's just hit the ground running. Fern, why'd you make this film?
In 1990, I got in a conversation with a Holocaust survivor and a friend of mine about Art Spiegelman's Mouse, and the survivor was very upset about it. We got in a very thoughtful conversation with her. My friend and I went off in our separate directions, and he wrote this academic paper based on this conversation about humor in the camps during World War II, like humor in the ghettos, and I saw him in 1993, and he said, make this into a movie.
That was enough of an incentive for you.
When he handed me the paper and I read it, it was enough of an incentive.
Doesn't it almost seem like an oxymoron, you know, humor in the camps? It just seems like such an alien concept. And when I saw your film and did research about, with our first interview, I didn't even know there were cabarets in camps and that people sang and told jokes, or I'm still speechless over it.
Well, the difference between the paper and my film is my film opens it up to post-war humor, which the paper did not. But it was understanding that that existed, which made it okay for me to make the film, in my mind. It rationalized it for me, that if people could be funny in the camps, it was okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a number of people, one, you know, friend Judy and I have in common, Deb Filler, one of the first things I read while I was researching was her talking about her father, who told a lot of stories about humorous moments in the camps. And his line was, if you were funny before the camps, you were funny in the camps.
Right.
That was your spirit. That's right. Who you were.
Yeah. And that's what got you through,
right.
I
yeah.
would imagine.
Well,
humor
is such a coping mechanism. I mean, if you talk to any comedian, you know, their humor comes from, you know, having
adversity.
To... absolutely. And it's also the most disarming skill one could have is when you make someone laugh, you could have completely opposing views on everything. They like you.
That's the tie that binds?
There's also, I think it's a coping mechanism. I think it's disarming.
Mm.
And, you know, when you think about how Jews think, how we're taught to think, how the religion teaches us, listen, you think about your bar or bat mitzvah, it's taking a text that has been studied for thousands and thousands of years and saying, here, take this and think of something new, you know?
Right.
And that's what a joke is. It's something familiar with a surprise.
Except, you know, with Jews, right, there's always that added, it's okay, I'll sit in the dark.
Right.
You know, we're our own...
self-effacing,
yes.
Yes,
exactly.
But we don't hide. We don't, you know, a lot of people, oh, well, God's going to take care of us. We're very realistic, you know, and I think we're not afraid to deal with what exactly is happening, and not shoving it under the rug. You know, silence does equal death. But when you say, okay, can we talk about this?
Yeah.
We need to talk about this. And that's, I think that was their way of saying, let's talk about it. Because if they didn't, God only knows, if they didn't laugh, they'd be, how could they survive without humor?
I guess the other part of that, too, is that when you call it being a realist, is it also being a pessimist?
You know, it's funny because people always think Jewish.
Yeah, it goes in that direction.
But can you call someone who makes other people laugh a pessimist? It's someone who is very in touch
mm-hmm.
with the truth, mm-hmm. the real truth, not the, oh, no, it's going to, everything's going to be great. Everything, you know, look, everything, we probably, maybe we said that the first time, but you know, right. How many years have we been kicked out of every country?
Right.
It's like, all right, enough already, enough, exactly. You know? And this notion of this, you know, the Jewish mother being this overbearing Jew. I mean, of course, I'm sure it's sent from generation to generation.
Well,
you know?
That's in the DNA.
Right. It, and it's because of all we've been through. Okay, pack up. We got to go. But also, I feel like this notion of I never felt as negative and miserable as my mother could be. I never felt unloved. I never felt like I couldn't talk about her in my act. I never felt like it was something we couldn't talk about. And how can we not talk about the Holocaust now with the new generation of children now are not going to ever meet a Holocaust survivor?
Yes,
and
that's
it, right. This is such a palatable way to discuss the most horrific thing that, you know, has happened, period, in the 20th century, of course.
Well, what did you learn from this film or making this film? What was the tie that bound all these people who were in your film?
You know, as I'm listening to Judy speak, I'm thinking if she and I were in a camp together, I can't imagine knowing you and watching you that there wouldn't be a moment where if there was a possibility for you to make
tell a
quip
yeah,
or
yeah,
tell
yeah.
a joke, look who she is. She
sure.
could not do that. And that doesn't mean everybody has that reaction.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean everybody would laugh. But it does mean that that is a valid response that exists and existed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Renee, who's the
survivor.
The survivor in the movie, she and I talk about this a lot. It's easy for us in the world to look back on that time and say, how could you laugh? How could anybody make jokes about Auschwitz or anything like that? But we're looking back at what happened. In the moment, people were living their daily lives, going through a whole life of anti-Semitism and hatred and being treated badly. You mean to say that their entire lives, there wasn't one moment where they could, you know, have a family moment or have a laugh or have something, you know, that's what it's about. It's this natural instinct.
You know, it's also, yeah, I think there's an element of you took everything, but you're not taking that from me. You're not taking my humor.
Right.
You're not taking something, you know, that is me, is part of
my
who
essence.
I am. My essence.
Yes.
You know, you can take my food, you can take my family, but you cannot take who I am as a human being. Because if you let them, they win. You know, look how creative Jewish people are. We have turned to the arts. We do let our brains go there.
Mm-hmm.
And damn it, they're not going to take that. I'm sorry, they're not. And you look at the administration today. There is no humor in this administration whatsoever. You know, we're trying, believe me.
Yeah.
But it's so dangerous. And so, you know, there's so much fear. There's
well, it's
no
unbelievable.
Humor in fear.
Even though obviously the Holocaust is unbelievable too. Or you say it's 2017. I can't believe this.
Oh, it's remember you were speechless? I can't. It is mind boggling in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we know so much, you know, and what we've been through. I mean, look, I was born in 1962. I thought the Holocaust had happened, you know, for a kid. It's like, oh, that happens forever ago. And I think about it, it was less than 20 years before, you know, I was born.
Yes.
And look, how can this be happening now? I mean,
what have we not learned
right.
from all these seismic events
right.
that have transpired here, there, and sorry, everywhere. You know, it's just stunning.
Absolutely.
That must also hit home in a really fascinating way. You made this film, and when you made it, that was one dynamic. And how it's resonating today must completely bowl you over.
Well, it does.
What a thunk.
And in fact, right after the election, 24 hours later, I was in 9 film festivals in a row, starting from the Thursday after. And on the Saturday night, Judy and I were in Philadelphia, where the film was the centerpiece film of the festival there, of the Philly Jewish Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it was suddenly a different film I was showing. I mean, the film has now been accepted into or been in over 70 film festivals.
No kidding.
And
you started with Tribeca, didn't you?
I started with Tribeca.
Which is not small potatoes.
And then suddenly I was showing a different movie that, at least for a short period, was not as funny.
Yeah.
You know, was
hitting nerves.
It was wrenching.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, now people need a laugh again. Right. So it's actually helping again. But it has been an interesting change and at how relevant it's become.
I also think that Fern has hit a nerve with comedians because there is this we have an unspoken language. The way we speak to one another, the things we say to one another that we would never say.
Because they're so out there, you mean?
There's no too soon with us. Mm-hmm. There's no...
And there's no filter when you're talking.
Absolutely not.
Other comedians.
And yet people will react, you know, knee-jerk react to some rhetoric or some point, you know, that they feel like, I'm going to take this and that's what I'm going to be mad at. You know, and comics, any situation, no matter how ornery, we think... in joke. And the only people who will get it and say, you're not a horrible person, mm-hmm. that's hilarious, mm-hmm. is each other, you know? And it's the way we think. And, you know, it again goes back to that analyzing things and seeing things from a different perspective.
How was the movie initially received? I mean, that's one thing. I have to assume that there was a lot of...
There wasn't.
No kidding.
The film has been so well received. It has... mostly sold out audiences around the world. Mm-hmm. We went from Tribeca to Toronto to Munich to Jerusalem. Those were my first
Why wasn't
vessels.
I invited to those?
Wait a minute.
We're done.
Now, an itinerary. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Your head had to be spinning.
It was incredible. I mean, we could spend an entire podcast just talking about the responses in Munich.
I was just going to say, what the hell was that
but
like?
But the responses have been incredible, including Ellie Gross, the woman who's in the gondola yeah. with Renee, who, to her admission, finds no humor in anything about the Holocaust, but loved the film, thought it was so tastefully done, and in front of, you know, the whole premiere audience at Tribeca asked for tickets to the next show. So to me,
she said
that
to
was...
me, you know, it was interesting because I identified with both. You know, we have these two women, one who embraces humor, you know, is such a bright light, and then Ellie, who's my mother, you know.
Well, a complete 180.
Yeah. 180. And Ellie said to me, I like you, but I didn't like your jokes, you know.
But you know what? That makes sense.
Right.
I mean, you didn't come at her.
No.
Adversarially.
Right.
You know,
I get her.
In that case, it's not something you took personally.
Absolutely not.
Right.
I mean, I
totally understand.
Yeah. I mean, look, how can you judge someone who went through that and how they're going to be afterwards? Mm-hmm. You cannot. Of course, Renee, you just want a hug. And I think she's the exception in a lot of... ways.
Agreed. You know, there are so many factors at play. Renee and Ellie were born with different spirits. That's the first thing. But Renee came from a middle class or maybe even upper middle class family and had a lovely life. And, you know, her friends were Jewish and non-Jewish. You know, like she had a wonderful life before she was thrown into the camps. Ellie was born in Romania. She was spit on from the time she was born. She has no positive memories. She was thrown in the camps as a 15-year-old kid, lost her family. She has nothing. Mm-hmm. She cannot look back on one positive thing.
There's no reserve for her at all.
Right. But, you know, there are some people who grew up like Renee who went in Ellie's direction as well. But the fact that she could say... nope, I was happy then, and I'm going to be happy again. You know, that I remember during the AIDS crisis in the very beginning, and I would say to my friends, you know, you're bigger than this virus. Mm-hmm. And you have to realize that you are bigger than. And I think, Renee, that she is bigger than those years that she, you know, experienced in the camps.
Sure, sure. I'm curious, Fern, when you were... interviewing people who you were going to put in your film, was there anybody on the cutting room floor?
Not so much with the comedians.
Okay.
You know, I interviewed a number of authors as well. And what was hard was, unfortunately, for them to be edited alongside the comedians. It was, you know...
too jarring? Or
it was a little... you know, I mean, you have... comedians who are so dynamic and funny and whatever. And then you have this academic element.
Very serious.
And it just was a different film. Mm. It felt like a different film. So that was our biggest
struggle.
I know
something that was on the editing room floor.
She still holds a grudge.
Yeah, I had an Anne Frank joke that was not included. And it was...
Is this a sore point or we can...
Oh, I just tease her all the time. You know, one of my first jokes, the first jokes I ever wrote was in the 80s when I had visited the Anne Frank house. And I got very emotional, which I hadn't expected. And I kept thinking about my family in that situation.
Did you lose any relatives in the...
Not that I know of. Okay. Not that I'm sure I did. Second,
right.
Yeah. But I kept imagining my, you know, immediate family in that situation. I mean, because, you know, these people had to keep silent for, you know, 24 hours. Yeah. Which would have been the demise. Yes.
Just parenthetically, I won most talkative my senior year in
high
school.
No way.
The second person had 6 votes. And we counted them at my house because that was my job on the yearbook. And I was watching my father, you know. 102, 4. You know, so anyway.
So, but you know, just that keeping silent would have been the demise of my entire family because my mother would have never kept her mouth shut. Judith, I asked you to wash that dish 10 minutes ago. Ma, shut up. We're going to get caught. That's right. We're going to get caught. We're all going to die because you couldn't wash a goddamn dish. Right. Which I wrote in the 80s, but apparently other people's Anne Frank jokes were funnier.
What made you, as a comedian, include that in your repertoire?
My father served in World War II. He was in London. He was there during Blitzkrieg. But he never talked about it. And my mother was obsessed with what happened to the Jews in Europe.
They wouldn't
buy a Ford because of Henry Ford and their relationship. I mean, I grew up in this house.
Wow.
And constantly being, they hate us, they all hate us, they hate us, they hate us, they hate us. And I used to get really annoyed. Now I say to my kids, just remember when it boils down to it. But it's, I can't believe that I have to say that to my children. And my mother would always wanted me to hang around with the Jewish kids. You know, it's important to have Jewish friends. They don't, you know, understand. It's amazing because I have so many second generation 2G friends who are like, you're like a member of the group. I did think in joke when I went to visit the Anne Frank house, and I thought to myself, I have to talk about this. And to this day, I talk about the Holocaust pretty much 90% of the time I'm on stage. I will mention.
Really?
It's interesting because so many people, when you mention Anne Frank, they have no idea, these young kids, you know, in I think, how many states do they have Holocaust? I think it's maybe 6 or 7 in the public school curriculum. They must teach about the Holocaust. But there's a film of it's on YouTube, of a second generation, I guess she's a teacher, and she went to the campus of UPenn, Penn State, Temple. The kids who had grown up in Pennsylvania had no idea. And basic questions, you know, what were the name of concentration camp? When was the Holocaust? No
Jewish
idea.
Jewish kids?
No, they were not Jewish kids. And then she finds someone who grew up in New Jersey, knew everything. She had to, it was part of the curriculum. So I think it's New York, New Jersey, Illinois, Florida, California. There's only 5 or 6 states that it is mandatory that they study the Holocaust. And the fact, I'm talking people who are, you know, at an Ivy League school and have no idea who Goebbels was, you know, it's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
So I feel when I talk about it, you have no right to ooh and ah at me. You know, I'm a Jew. I might not have been there, but I need to remind people. I mean, I've had issues. I've had issues with, and a lot of Jewish people, lefty Jewish people complaining, you know, when I was doing my mother, you know, you're portraying a stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing my mother. I'm doing my Jewish mother.
Right.
In the middle of the country. You're sitting on, you know, the Upper West Side in your little group talking about how horrible it is to be a Jew. And no, I'm out there proud of my Jewish mother. So it's this,
dichotomy, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
That people find difficult to reconcile.
Right.
Well, you can't reconcile a dichotomy.
Yeah, right.
You know? Did you find that to be true when you were talking to some of the other folks in your film, that they share Judy's position?
Well, you know, most of the comedians I spoke to, you know, generally felt like this was okay and meant to be. Even in the film, Mel Brooks says, when he's sort of put off by one of Joan Rivers' jokes, he's like, I appreciate it. She told it funny. It's just I couldn't do it. And he goes on to say, you know, comedians are the conscience of the people, and it's their job to push these limits.
Yeah, but that being said, when I saw a non-Jewish comedian talking about the Holocaust, that really got to me.
Why? In the film.
Yes. What did they say? We have a neshama, you know, a soul, a Jewish soul. Look, when I travel and I see, I could see, oh my God, you're a Jew, you know? We have some sort of...
It's that je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it makes me feel safer, you know?
There's an understated connection.
Right,
I mean,
right.
We don't love all Jews, you know?
Right.
I mean, I know Jewish people who are the most, you know,
annoying,
oh,
horrible.
Obnoxious.
Yeah.
I hate
yeah.
you, yeah. you know? If you're going to go tackle the Holocaust as a topic that sensitive, your joke better be funny.
Oh,
absolutely.
I mean, that's got to be massive, because if you're up there and...
Oh, you have to have... It has
it better,
to be...
It better... You better hit it
you
out of the park.
You can't tackle that topic with a crappy joke or a thoughtless joke.
Were there crappy jokes?
I interviewed some of the best comedians out
Hello.
There. So
yes.
there, I mean, I have outtakes coming... You know, like right now we're launching like 10 days of outtakes and... look out for the Judy Gold Anne Frank joke. Could be today, actually. But I mean, I could have made the 10-part series, so I didn't have that problem. My problem was I was too ambitious with what I wanted to fit into one film. So I had a really interesting Arab American comedian telling a joke that went viral about him. His name is Amir Kay. Do you know him?
Mm-mm.
He's out in L.A., and it was right after 9/11, and he had just done a show in, like, Oklahoma or something, and these people getting on the plane looked at him as if he were a terrorist.
Right.
And he has a total L.A.
Right.
accent, but he put it on, and he started...
He fed yeah. into it.
Yeah.
He fed into mm-hmm. it, put on the accent, and started, you know, looked at them, and he was like, October 25th. And, like, was doing all these things on the plane, and they
right.
were shitless, the whole,
right.
like, scared shitless the
right.
whole plane ride.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to, like, open it up to other, you know, taboo, uncomfortable things. So that, something like that, didn't make it in the film. But not because it wasn't funny, because it was too broad for my topic.
Well, mm-hmm. that's a really nice segue for something that I wanted to say. I saw your film, and I talked about this when we had the talk back at the Teaneck Film Festival, that my blood ran cold, and I had a physical reaction when Susie Essman said, there's nothing funny about rape. And, you know, what can you not talk about? And it was so knee-jerk. It was, mm-hmm. you're damn straight there isn't,
right.
you know. You know, you wonder, as you think about this, what are those unspoken taboos? And that, you know, sexual abuse and violence has got to be, to me, is the number one.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing I've learned is, unless you're a comedian, and this isn't true of all comedians, but... Everybody has some sort of line. Mostly everybody. I don't think Gilbert has a line.
No, not at all.
His joke was pretty funny.
But there are certain things, you know, like even me, I have a line. And there were certain things I didn't go towards because I thought that that crossed my personal line. And mm-hmm. I felt like I told the story without going there.
Good point. Now, I certainly know about the Holocaust. I'm Jewish. I didn't lose anybody in there. Mm-hmm. But boy, God forbid, anybody I knew, or
right.
myself included, was sexually attacked
oh.
or whatever. So did you feel that you've died and gone to heaven with this film?
Well, I never imagined I would be working harder after finishing the film
than
while making it. So it has been an incredible ride. I'm sort of speechless about it, really.
But it's also in the zeitgeist. You know, it's really important that people see this film because of where we are today.
But who knew?
Yeah.
You know, that's the part that's,
yeah.
you know, that Beshert thing, which
yeah.
means kind of meant to
yeah.
be, you know, who would have thunk
right.
that this would have resonate the way it is now.
Yeah.
Now, I would trade that.
Yes.
you know, if it went a different way.
I hear you.
But
yeah, it's out of your hands.
It is what it is.
You think about this. You made a movie and you made a documentary, but you're also providing a public service.
And it's something, you know, I'm glad people can see, because we get a lot of crap when we deal with subversive topics. And can you believe that one said that and this one said that? Because now people are filming us in comedy clubs, you know, and taking a portion of what we're saying and reacting to it. And this really tells a story. You know, it tells an amazing story of survival. And I think it's really necessary, because there are a lot of people in this country who have no sense of humor, as we are seeing right now.
What gives that away?
And take themselves so seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a very harmful thing, is taking yourself way too seriously. It's harmful.
When does your alarm go off, Judy, as a veteran comedian? When do you feel you've gone too far, or have you not gone too far?
I feel that I have, if it comes from an angry... You know, anger is kind of funny, but the kind of anger that is misogynistic. When I'm joking and I feel that I'm really, this person is really anti-Semitic, you know, in the audience, or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it's not funny. I, you know, I defend, you know, it comes from a non-funny place when you know that this person is harmful or is really, you know, racist or homophobic or anti-Semitic or whatever, misogynistic. When it's not funny, when it's coming from a not funny place, that's where I cut it off.
But on the other hand, when you're talking personally and you're using the pronoun mm-hmm. I all the time, that's a different mindset.
Right.
How can you criticize that? Yeah, okay, so you don't find it funny, but this is about me and this is what I'm saying and what I'm doing.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting now, because when we get off stage, a lot of the times we say to each other, there's a couple Trump supporters in the audience, so beware. I mean, that's the way it is now. Oh, they're
well,
Trumpies.
That's the cross they have to bear, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
You know, that's not my problem.
Right. But we warn each other, because they can't get outside of themselves. You know, it's, you know, they're like militant.
I don't think a lot of Trump supporters have senses of humor.
Absolutely.
So that's why that's that tie that binds.
Right.
Not for nothing.
Right.
You know,
and when you have that and you're talking about, you know, I'm a Jew, you know, I'm talking about, like, you know, my perspective, the way I see the world. How dare you deny it?
Or criticize it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Whether you find it funny or not is immaterial.
Right.
Well, this is interesting because, like I said, the film's been in about 70 film festivals. And the misconception about the film is that it's just for Jewish people. When only about 10 or 15 of those festivals out of 70 have been Jewish film mm-hmm. festivals. And, you know, you go to these film festivals and they're very liberal. And so you don't really run into...
Well, what at Philadelphia?
Well, this is what I was going to say, that the non-Jewish film festivals have been all very liberal. At the Jewish film festivals, you find that there's more of a mix. There's mm-hmm. more Trump supporters. And what I have found is often people say, what is the reaction? Are people, you know, unhappy? The only thing I can say is that they're not telling me. They're leaving before the discussion, and they're not telling me if they're unhappy. They're not walking out during the film, mm-hmm. so I'm not getting that. And then I said that at a Q&A the other night, and somebody said, Jewish people, if they don't like it, they're going to tell you. So I thought, okay. But what I do notice that's happening is at these festivals post-election, often they're being introduced by the festival directors who are talking about we're living in divided times, and, you know, this is a time to come together, and this film is a perfect way to, you know, have conversation. And so what's happening is those people are leaving before the discussion. Mm-hmm. They're not walking out of the film. So I think they like the film, but they're not subjecting themselves to the conversation.
That's very interesting. And every film festival has...
The Jewish film festivals
post-election. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing, because I think that is a personal thing. Because, you know, I'm so proud to be a Jew. I mean, I love being Jewish. I love everything about it. And, you know, I get stupid, idiotic questions when I when I do local press, like, oh, well, are you more Jewish or are you more gay? It's like ridiculous. I mean, there's not even.
I'm going to cross
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Okay. Whoa, glad we got that.
Like, how do you identify yourself? And, you know, people are so obsessed with identity and self-identity. And so.
You got to be labeled, man, or else there's no raison d'etre.
Yeah, exactly. And so I feel that. I love being Jewish. I will tell the world I am a Jew. I am proud. And some of these people grew up in these times. Don't, you know, listen, we're Jewish. Keep quiet about it. Keep quiet.
Right.
And I think those are the ones who leave. They don't, they're afraid to join that discussion or be exposed as a Jew.
Take
and
their
that,
clothes
yeah.
off. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I come from, my mother was born in 1922. Every day after grammar school, would go sit in the boys' Hebrew school class 5 days a week, voluntarily. She was the only girl. It was like 36 boys and my mother. And that's how I, you know, my mother loved being a Jew.
Uh-huh.
And
she wasn't looking for a husband necessarily.
Oh, no, because she was in grammar school. But they, you know, she just loved it to the point where, you know, I hear stories from relatives now. Oh, she came over. We had just had bacon. I had to open the windows, you know. But, you know, I grew up in a kosher home. My mother made a sukkah. You know, it was something that really brought us together, even though I was like, Mom, why can't I have go to Burger King? You know. We had Hydrox. Yeah, we had Hydrox and not Oreos, you know. I brought my lunch, you know. But, you know, it reminded me I'm a Jew, you know, every day. There was some reminder.
That's so different today, I think, that there's so much more of an integration and a blending. I see it with my children and, you know, it's just not the same.
Right.
In terms of age range, is that fairly eclectic as to who's coming to see this film?
Well, you know, you definitely get, you know, older Jews coming.
I mean, older Jews going to the movies.
However, young people starting at the age of 15, and I only say it's really like at that point, it's what the parents will allow because there's some language.
Right.
But I have had such an incredible response from young people. And that's really, that was my goal, right? Here's a way to learn about something on the side, you know?
Right, without it being beaten into your head, that it's enjoyable.
I just was at the Miami Jewish Film Festival.
And well, now, there's redundancy.
Yeah. Hello.
But a kid.
Miami Jewish Film Festival.
It was mostly older people. In fact, the first screening, people were like in, you know, their 80s, mid-80s.
Get out of my way!
They told me that the next screening in South Beach was going to be younger, and it was, you know, 65 to 80.
That is young.
Yeah. But at the second screening, somebody came with their 15-year-old son, and he said to me, I so appreciate that you didn't tell me what to think and that I learned about all these things without meaning to.
Right, right.
And I thought that is my goal, right?
But because that's what humor is, too.
Yeah.
That's how it works its way into you without beating you over the head.
Yeah,
right.
Great way to end. So, Fern, tell us how people can find you and the film.
You can find anything you want to know about updated screenings and whatnot at our Facebook page, which is Last Laugh Film, one word. Or our website, which is lastlaughfilm.us.
And Judy, what's going on in your life?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Judy Gold, JewDyGold.
Gee, what a surprise.
I know. And I also host a podcast called Kill Me Now, which you can get on iTunes or at judygold.com/podcast.
Competition here.
Yeah, well, it's
that's
a little different.
Great.
It's a little different. And, you know, I'm touring, so I have a calendar on my website, judygold.com.
Fern Perlstein, Judy Gold, thanks so much for having a conversation
with
me.
It's
and
fun.
The film, of course, is The Last Laugh, which you will be laughing through, and opens in New York March 3rd, L.A. on the 17th, and everywhere.
On the 17th?
Yeah, exactly. Here, there, and everywhere. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.